From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell him Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 82 of Little Brother for the 23rd of April, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this show are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. In episode 44, I spoke about the Freedom Phone. The Freedom Phone is a smartphone developed of, by, and for the political right in what appeared to be at the time, and still does, a backlash against the efforts of Silicon Valley to maintain online civility. Freedom OS, the customized version of Android that runs on the Freedom Phone, includes bespoke versions of numerous apps that can be found on the Google Play Store. Well, security researcher Matthew Garrett has done some examination of one of the apps in particular, Clear Signal, a customized version of the Signal private messenger, and found that it has been compromised, but in ways that suggest incompetence rather than malfeasance. The problems include a missing privacy policy, when you follow the link at 404s, update enforcement, which keeps Signal from working unless you've properly updated, is also missing, and they've added a facility for cloud backup of your Signal data. On the whole, it's a mess, and it can be added to the reasons not to get this overpriced device. I've often been uneasy about microphones on our devices, and I say that even as I've got a big one sitting right in front of me right here. For webcams on our laptops, covers have been available for a long time to blind the camera, but there's no easy way to securely mute the microphones on most computers and cell phones. In almost all cases, muting the microphone doesn't do so at the level of the hardware, but instead it simply tells the software not to capture the audio. Unfortunately, some teleconferencing software, the very thing that has made pandemic life feasible for many, has not been very good about ignoring the input audio when it's been muted. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison have published a paper on their findings. Having used runtime binary analysis to determine which applications were still passing audio traffic to the network when the app is muted. Interestingly enough, all of the conference platforms behaved correctly when used through a web browser. It looks like the copyright crowd are back. A bill introduced by Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, and Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat of Vermont, would, if passed, require the Librarian of Congress to produce a list of designated technical measures, or DTMs, that websites and other disseminators of information can use to patrol for copyright infringement. Anyone who has known the frustration of having a video on social media flagged for containing half a second of a mainstream song playing on a radio way in the background that isn't even part of the key content can see clearly how this will go wrong. For that matter, check out my coverage of Apple's attempts to prevent child porn from episodes 47 and 65. Some interpretations of the bill also indicate that specific software may be required to be deployed to websites, which, if a legal requirement, could be setting the stage for a mass pwn should that software ever develop an exploit. Music. Say what you will about Elon Musk and the companies that he has founded, SpaceX has been doing a solid deed by opening up internet access in Ukraine. Naturally, the Russian government has been attempting to jam these communications, and they've generally failed, as SpaceX has been able to adapt dynamically to Russia's tactics. Dave Tremper, the director of electronic warfare at the U.S. Department of Defense, has described SpaceX's ability to do this as eye-watering, saying, quote, "We need to have that ability," end quote. A few months ago, in episodes 71, 73, and 74, I spoke a bit about Apple's practice of requiring limits and transparency to tracking performed by apps on the Apple Store. At the time, the cost to Meta, the company formerly known as Facebook, was projected to be approximately $10 billion. That, it seems, was a conservative estimate. Some financial news outlets are now projecting that the losses are going to be closer to $16 billion. Aww. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Representative Ted Lieu, a Democrat of California, has introduced a bill called the Warrant for Metadata Act, which, if enacted, would improve your privacy. Right now, physical artifacts, such as your phone, your computers, anything you have on paper, etc., can't be legally seized or examined by the government without first getting a warrant as required by the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. However, a long-standing practice called the third-party doctrine has generally allowed law enforcement to get around that for metadata. Historically, this has meant phone call records kept by your phone company, but in the digital age, it's expanded to just about any piece of information that you put into a third party's hands for safekeeping. That party, be it an email provider, cloud storage provider, social media platform, whatever, can hand the information over to law enforcement by way of subpoena, or even just a request. Lieu's bill, assuming that it can overcome the gridlock in Washington, would require a warrant to be issued before any such release can take place. Despite the fact that I don't have a Pwn of the Week for this week, I do want to talk a little bit about the insane rate of pwnage that has been happening in the world. I want to say that this has been happening since maybe 2014 or so. It was just all of a sudden not a week could go by without you hearing about some organization being hit by some kind of attack. We've had phishing, ransomware, supply chain attacks, 0 days, you know, all the fun things in a nearly steady rain for the past 8 years or so. It seems at times like the business world hasn't caught on to the fact that this is costing money and goodwill and reputation every time it happens. Some companies don't even seem to act like it's any kind of a big deal to get pwned. T-Mobile! Excuse me, my allergies are horrible this time of year. Now, some companies do get it. Forbes recently held up FedEx, Hasbro, PNC, and UPS as examples of corporations that have gotten the memo, so to speak, and put cybersecurity experts on their boards of directors. I think that's a really good idea. Apparently, the Securities and Exchange Commission also thinks this is a really good idea. Some years ago, under the authorities of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, corporations were required to put financial expertise into the boardroom. Now, it looks like the SEC is making moves to do the same thing with cybersecurity expertise. All I can say is it's about goddamn time. I want to take a moment to talk about open source router firmware. My listeners are probably already familiar with the idea of open source software, but just in case, the short version of it is that this is software that's been developed by independent third parties, Not only is it available for free, but even the source code is available for free. You can take it, modify it various ways, make your own builds, etc. The firmware in your router is no different. Many routers natively use some specialized build of Linux running on an ARM processor to do what they do, which is to shuttle data back and forth between your private network and the public network that your ISP brings to your doorstep. There are four major benefits to open source firmware that I can think of, and I'd invite you to all add to the list if you know of something else that I'm missing here, but here they are. First, you can use open source firmware to breathe new life into an old device. Now, don't get me wrong here. This isn't going to take something like an old WRT54G, a little G-class router that everybody and their brother had, and suddenly make it capable of speaking AX on both bands. But you remember my mantra? Patch your systems! Yeah, that one. So what often happens with older devices like this is that the manufacturer reaches a point where they just don't want to maintain the updates for it anymore, and they just don't. Unfortunately, this is not okay. If a vulnerability should be discovered for your device, then you're hosed, potentially. You know, if somebody looking for that vulnerability finds you. Open source firmware for a given router is usually just a specific build of a project with the appropriate set of options turned on, and as long as the finished one can fit into your router's memory, you're good to go. In case of a vulnerability, the maintainers fix it, and then they just kick off a wide-ranging set of builds, fixing all of the various models and versions of routers that the firmware runs on in one fell swoop. You just need to go get it and update. Second, the firmware that the manufacturer includes in your router doesn't always give you the ability to do everything that the hardware is capable of doing. Usually, it's tightly focused on being an internet gateway for a home or a small office, and it doesn't include the ability to do things like work with multiple internet connections, set up a VPN, use one of the wireless interfaces as an upstream, function as an extender, or sometimes even just things like supporting IPv6. The right firmware can convert your router from a one-trick pony into a Swiss Army knife. Third, while it doesn't necessarily, open source firmware can improve your network security. Now, the most observable way that it does this is to shift who you need to trust with your router. If the manufacturer had some sort of backdoor or tracker in their firmware, replacing it with open source firmware will probably dispatch that pretty handily. This isn't to say that open source firmware necessarily doesn't have flaws or vulnerabilities or backdoors or trackers in it, but anything of that sort that makes its way into the code in deliberate bad faith can be spotted by the maintainers and hopefully purged out before it gets built and distributed. I would say the thing to remember here is that professionals built the Titanic, but amateurs built the Ark. So fourth, and this is my favorite, if you have to deal with a bunch of routers made by different manufacturers, getting them all onto the same open source firmware will actually make them all work in the same way, making your life easier. Give or take a couple of things due to, you know, hardware differences. If you know how to use OpenWRT, for instance, it doesn't matter if you're trying to set up a Netgear router or a Linksys, an Asus or a Ubiquiti. They all end up with the same familiar interface. And once you know how to set one up, you know how to set them all up. Now, getting set up with open source firmware isn't actually as difficult as all that. It's got to be done right, don't get me wrong, but getting it right isn't hard. If you're trying to fit it onto a router that you already own, the first step is to find out what open source firmware supports that router. Now, do be aware, sometimes you don't have this option. I've owned a couple of routers where this didn't exist, but thankfully, they were the exception rather than the rule. Once you've found a firmware package that matches your router, usually all you need to do is go through the router's update process, the same one you would use to patch it, which you are doing, right? Just substituting in the open source package in place of the one that the manufacturer would have provided. On the other hand, if you're shopping for a new router, you can poke around for recommendations and look at the website for the open source firmware that you want to run and see what routers are supported and get one of those. Linksys routers, for instance, are often supported because this whole movement began on that platform. You remember that WRT54G I mentioned ago? Yeah, that was actually the first router you could get open source firmware onto. However, as I said before, while this isn't hard, it does have to be done right. You should be careful not to upload the wrong firmware build to a router because you could end up bricking it. So do pay attention to the details, and if something seems off, try to figure out why. In coming episodes, I'll talk a little bit about specific open source firmwares that I've used, specifically DDWRT and OpenWRT, and about how to find the right build and what you can expect from them. People quite often give away way too much information about themselves. Look at the backs of cars when you're out driving, and you're sure to see what I'm talking about. You're likely to find one somewhere that's got a stick figure family, advertising to anyone who cares what the family structure is. How many kids? Cats? Dogs? What kind of dogs? Here's somebody that's got a schnauzer. Well, it's likely that they don't have a Doberman or some other large breed also that might pose a threat to an invader. From the bumper stickers, you might also find out their political affiliation, where their kids go to school, what their hobbies are, what kind of work they do, and in some cases, you might even get their name. Much as I love these guys, my fellow ham radio operators are some of the worst offenders here. Quite often, the extra antennas on the car make it look like a porcupine advertising expensive radio equipment. And if you've put your call sign on your car, you've given everyone enough information to figure out your name and maybe where you live. For the record, I have one extra antenna, and I shopped for one that is subtle and matches the car. You'd really actually have to be looking for it to see it. Today, I saw a car parked at the grocery store that was a great example. It had been painted bismuth pink, the color of Pepto-Bismol. It had custom license plates, the owner's social media handles, even a placard with her snap code and avatar. Tracking this person down if somebody wanted to do her harm would be child's play. So this brings me to the OPSEC tip of the week. Don't give away information that you don't need to. In all likelihood, you don't have anyone trying to track you down. But how would you know? Don't make it easy for them. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group and to Restore the Fourth. Special thanks to Azrael, Mystere73, and Ed for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Well, where was he? As required by the Fourth Amendment. Yep. Assuming that it can overcome the gridlock. So this brings me to the OPSEC tip of the.